Our rendezvous is recorded before a live drinking audience.
We are back with our rendezvous after a couple of weeks off because we had some interesting developments. I'm Ben Higgins, my wife Shelley.
Hi, guys.
Here. Yeah, so your 40th birthday
yes.
took place last weekend when we yep. usually record our podcast.
So. I am finally 40. My friends are so excited. And they're almost 50. So it's, you know, it's not a long time here.
So we've got a fun little podcast planned. We have to talk about the comedy show we went to.
Oh, Scott my God.
Great friend.
Woodsy was so good. He
it was
so
pretty
good.
Cool. I'm sorry that more listeners couldn't be involved or see it, but there's a reason for that, and we'll get to that as well. We will spin the wheel of indecision. We will talk to Steve, who is one of the regulars here at
yep.
the Regal Seagull.
Yep, Steve's been here sitting with me at the bar.
So we've got a really fun next half hour or so planned for you, and as every really fun and exciting podcast begins, I think we have to start by talking about suicide and depression, which I know kind of sucks. Well, we're coming off the week where we had a couple of very high-profile suicides, and Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, who in particular was one that hit us hard. I woke up early in the morning for my show.
Yeah, Ben actually saw the news when he woke up and knew that he couldn't leave me to find out the news on my own. So he woke me up at 4 o'clock this morning.
And I don't do that for every
no.
celebrity suicide.
No.
I mean, working in the news, it's something you see, unfortunately, all too often. But this one in particular, I felt, was a little more meaningful for the two of us. One reason is when our kids were little, and, you know, when kids are small, you spend a lot of time at home watching television. We spent so much time watching Anthony Bourdain's programs, first No Reservations, and then The Layover, and now he had the CNN show Parts Unknown. We both read his books. Kitchen
All
Confidential is one of my favorite books. I don't know about you, but
yeah.
that resonated. It's just such an unbelievable read.
Yeah. He made a big impact on our life and throughout our marriage. We always have been following everything he's doing. And for me personally, he, you know, I talk about this on social media. I'm very open about my depression and the fact that I have had it since I was very young, and I've been in therapy since I was very young. And he was someone who I kind of learned from, because he was so vocal about it, his depression, and I learned that really one of the ways to live for me was to be more true and more honest to myself and to people around me about just me, and not try so hard to be someone that I think I'm supposed to be. I think that depression is a very difficult thing, and it's hard for people who don't struggle with it to understand. And we all, people who have this disease, this illness, it's different for everyone. So I only speak for myself here, but my depression talks to me like it's my best friend. It is sitting here. It knows everything about me. It knows what I love. It knows what I hate. It knows the things I care about. It knows the stuff that I hate about my body. It knows everything about me. And it talks to me all day long and tries to bring me so far down, killing me with the things that I care about. And it's a struggle for me every single day, even though I've been in therapy for years. I went to a cognitive therapist. If anyone is interested in that, you should look it up. It helped me a lot. I was able to learn how to redirect my thoughts and kind of make sense out of them. And it's helped me immensely. But a day like today is a very difficult day for someone who suffers from depression, because we fight this fight every day. And when it's someone who you literally like looked up to because they were fighting the fight too, and they were so vocal about it, when they could no longer fight the fight, you just never want to end up feeling that way. Like, that's our goal, is to not end up feeling that way. So when someone ends up feeling that way, it scares you. It scares me. I'm scared. I have been suicidal in my life. I'm not suicidal right now. Depression is very hard. I can manage I have things I do to cope. I'm fine. You guys know I'm happy. I find joy, but it is something that is a minute by minute daily fight for me.
I feel very lucky that I don't deal with it. I am just a generally upbeat person. So are you. I don't want to equate depression with being a positive or a negative person. It's not. But
no.
I can't, even if I tried, I cannot hold on to sadness and anger and self-doubt for more than just a minute or two. It just evaporates for me. I think it's just a blessing that I've received. So that's why I tend to be, always kind of a happy-go-lucky sort of person. But I admired Anthony Bourdain because I think this is what confused me, and you try to explain it to me, but I don't know that someone who doesn't deal with it can ever totally understand. He dealt with his demons so upfront. He talked about his addiction, his depression, the problems that he dealt with, and I always felt like, yeah, that's terrible, but as long as someone is honest about them, is willing to talk about them and get treatment, it sucks, but they're going to get through it because they recognize it and they can identify it, and when it gets bad, they know what to do.
I think that is a very fair thing to say. It doesn't work like that, and I obviously there's not the perfect answer for people wondering why here, and it's hard for me to explain to you when I am in a very dark place. I know I have the common sense to know that I have a awesome life, and you guys know, you probably look at my Instagram and think, geez, Shell lives it up, and I do, and I will tell you this right now, I love everything I do. I love talking to people, meeting people. I love my friends so hard. I just, part of that I think comes from the depression almost. It's like I live so hard and love so hard because I know how dark it can be. And it's so just difficult to explain, but we have to start talking about it because this can't keep going.
I think the other thing about Anthony Bourdain, for me at least, was I've always wanted to be a world traveler. I'm fascinated by other places, other cultures, food experiences, but I've never really gotten a chance to do it. I mean, life is busy. We have kids. I have two jobs. We live in San Diego. It's not easy to just, up and fly to the other side of the planet for an experience. We've traveled internationally like twice in our life. We went to Mexico for a wedding,
yep,
and we did a week in Italy, soon after we were married. And that's it. And I've always dreamed of going to see all these places. But, on the other side of 40, I hope that at some point, maybe in our retirement years, we'll get a chance to do that and go some unique places. But until then, I've always kind of lived vicariously through Anthony Bourdain.
For sure.
At the very least, if I can't go, I see this guy who is just enjoying it to the fullest.
Right.
Experiencing it with the people, eating everything that there was to eat. And I thought, all right, it's the next best thing. If I can't go, let me watch him experience it for me.
But the way he was able to do that and the way he was able to capture us all so strongly was because he was so passionate and so honest, and he was fighting this fight. And that's how he was able to live the way he did. And I want people to remember him for his life and not because he committed suicide. And that's where I'm going to go with this, because I've been crying all morning since 4 o'clock this morning, and it's now, 1:30? And I'm a mess. We lost someone that we love and care about, and I think we'll miss him, but we need to remember him as from his life. He lived it to the fullest. He taught us that being our true selves is more important than trying to please others. And he taught me, here's another thing. Patty and I were talking about this when I got here. He cared about the little guy. He wanted to sit down with the kitchen guys, with the Coors Light, and find out about their lives. He was not a highfalutin, you know.
He really championed the cause of the Ecuadorian kitchen staff, yeah. The Latinos, knowing that they were the ones who often were making the magic in these high-end restaurants. It wasn't the executive chef who whisked in on a jet and had restaurants in London and Paris and Las Vegas and New York. It was the guys who were on the line that were actually putting the food out every day, and they so often were poor immigrants who came to this country looking for just a job, which is, you know, it's hot, it's long hours, it's hard work, it's people yelling at you. And he did. He was always a champion of those, you know, kitchen workers, the anonymous people in the back, and I respected that about him.
Yeah. So we wanted to touch on that a little bit. You guys can follow me at Shelly Higgins on Twitter. I talk about my struggles a little bit on there. I am happy. If you want to email me, shellyhiggins@gmail.com, you can. And I feel like we have to give the Lifeline number out. It's 1-800-273-8255. I get it. Like, it's a phone number, and I don't know that I would call a phone number, but just call me or just text me or whatever. Just get a hold of me. I'm here. Like, sometimes you just need a voice to, or an ear to listen, or even just a voice to talk to you. Like, I get it. I get it.
It's never fails to, I never miss when you come to the Regal Seagull, when you're driving from Encinitas on Leucadia Boulevard to the coast and you get to the train crossing. You always see the suicide prevention line because it's such a problem with the train tracks here in Encinitas, and so many people have committed suicide that way. So it's always kind of right there. It reminds you that that depression is very real, suicide is very real, and it's still something that we don't understand completely.
Yeah.
So.
I wanted, a friend of mine tweeted something this morning, and I'm not going to name his name, but I would give him credit, that really affected me and I think can maybe explain a little bit to people who don't suffer from mental illness or depression. He said, while the expression long-term solution to a short-term problem or in any variation of it is mostly valid, I don't believe it applies to those of us with long-term clinical depression. Living with depression is only as short-term as life is short. Sometimes death really does seem like the only form of relief.
Robert,
it's hard to admit as it is to believe, but it's a truth for a lot of us. And I need to say that suicide is not, it's not a short way out. Like, that's not what people are, the suffering that these people are going through is very real and unlike anything any of us will know. So don't, you know, don't say it's pathetic. Don't say it's selfish. Just don't, okay? Like, if you have not lived with depression or experienced it, I truly don't, we can't judge, is what I'm saying, I guess. Just don't judge. Just.
Well, I only know him from television, but one thing I can feel pretty confident that Anthony Bourdain would want us to do is drink.
Yes.
So
we are going to do that.
We're going to do that. We're going to have a beer. In fact, Shelly is going to.
I'm about to spin the wheel,
our
guys.
Wheel of indecision as
with
we
the
do
the little Thighmaster action
every week to determine what beer. There's 24 different spots, 24 taps here at the Regal Seagull. A wide variety of selections: IPAs, lagers, stouts, Belgians,
and
even a cider.
We just started an Instagram account. I can't remember what we called it, so I'll look
it up.
It's
Our Rendezvous Podcast.
Okay, Our Rendezvous Podcast on Instagram. And Ben's going to take a picture of me spinning the wheel. We had a friend request it, or a video. I don't know what he's going
to
do.
Do a video? All right, I'll try to do a good video. I'm not the best at videos, which is kind of weird since I work in television. But Shelly is going to spin. She's going to get the Thighmaster out, which is part of it. I won't show that part for you because I know she's already turning red. I'm not even showing you the Thighmaster. She's going to spin the wheel, trying to determine what beer she'll be drinking during our podcast today. And it stops at number, is it 17 or 18? I can't tell. It's right on the line. Why don't you get a choice between 17 and 18 at least, Shell? All right, so looks like she's going to choose between, what were your choices here? She's going to go with number 17.
It was Maui Brewing
a Maui Brewing Company beer.
Slippa Sippa, which is a session IPA. That's
all right.
What I'm going with.
Slippa Sippa Session IPA from Maui Brewing Company, which is a Hawaiian craft beer.
Yes.
Out of Maui.
Yep. And a session's perfect because right, I've already had a beer.
I think
so.
That's karma because I wasn't sure where we were going to go next.
Yeah.
But I feel like we should bring Steve on because he is always heading to Hawaii.
So right.
Since we've spun a Hawaiian beer here, let's bring on Steve. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, as he usually is. And Patty's here, too. So, hi, Steve. Good to see you.
Hi. Nice to see you guys.
You're one of the regulars here at the Regal Seagull.
Every Friday, as much as I can.
Okay. So, maybe we see you a lot because that's our day as well. That we see a bunch. Now, you and Shelley were talking earlier. I don't even know what direction this conversation is going. I know you spent a lot of time in Hawaii. I don't even know exactly what it is that you do, though. So why don't you start there?
Well, first thing I wanted to say before I start on me is to thank Shelley for her openness on talking about her depression. And I know her as a pretty bright soul, a very happy soul. And I know that things go on behind the scenes. And bringing that to light is, I think, helpful for a lot of people.
Thanks, buddy. So Steve and I sit here at the bar together sometimes, and if I come alone, I bring my book. Right. And he always is interested in what I'm reading, and then we end up having this, like, long conversation about, I don't know, it always just goes somewhere, right? Like, just goes to some... I didn't even know what Steve did until today, and we've known each other for probably, like, 2 or 3 years.
Well,
I didn't know... I mean, your hobby is, like... really interesting.
The hobby is the videotaping.
Yeah.
I like to videotape live bands, and I'm also involved with in the Grateful Dead circles of helping to bring some of the hidden recordings out into the public and into circulation. That's a kind of a behind the scenes thing that I'm not going to talk about too much.
Well, I need to get you involved with Bill Walton then the next time I see him.
I've run into him a couple times.
I figured sure. He barely has ever missed a Grateful Dead show in the last century.
He's been at every show I've been at, usually behind me, thankfully.
Yes,
behind him. Totally.
For sure.
So Steve loves music, as I do also. I love music. Ben is questionable. He likes yacht rock, which I don't even know if that's really music.
It is really music.
I mean,
it counts.
I guess. It's a station.
Not what you like.
It's a station.
It's a genre. It's soft rock from 1976 to 1984.
Yeah, there we go. That tells you everything you need to know about it. Steve loves music, and you go to concerts and video record.
I like to videotape to capture the moments that might otherwise be lost and not ever be seen or heard again. A lot of music I see has got improvisation in it, and that stuff just happens at the moment. And if nobody's there recording it, nobody ever hears it again.
I love that. But what's your day job, though?
Day job, I'm a scientist. I work at Beckman doing quality control for the kits that are used to do your blood and urine chemistry testing that you get at the doctor.
Yeah.
And that's sold all around the world. And I feel good about helping humanity that way.
Yeah, there you go. But I loved what you said earlier to me when we were talking. That you're using both sides of your brain, which I think is fascinating.
Scientist by day, artist by night?
Yes. And I know the more creative side of you, honestly, because I think that's where we go when we start talking about things. We talk about kind of life and, like, I don't know, just the way we live our lives. And I don't know. We have good conversations.
I'm fascinated, actually, by what Steve just said about the live recordings and how every show... As someone who, in a certain way performs on the radio, and every show that I do is very unique. We have good ones. We have not so good ones. We have parts that we like. They're all different. They're all improvisational. Ours, of course, is spoken word about sports. But the same does hold true in music. I mean, we're all familiar with studio recordings of most of the great songs in history, the ones we hear on the radio and we become so familiar with. But when songs are played live, they have a very different sound to them, and they can be, sometimes you think, oh, that's I didn't like that as much as the studio version. Other times you think that was an amazing twist to a song that I know and love so well.
Even because we went to Sturgill Simpson last year and saw him live at the Greek in LA, and even he was different just because of what's going on kind of in our political climate right now. And so his kind of anger in some of his songs was way more passionate than it is in the recordings that I've heard, you know? And so it's incredible how live music can have kind of whatever's going on in the day or...
In the moment.
In the moment, yeah. And it affects the artists immensely. Like, they can get emotional or... Yeah, I love that.
And you need to get artists that sometimes... they make a mistake and they get real self-conscious. And then you got other artists that when they make a mistake, they build on the mistake and they use that in their improvisation and just go a different direction and use it.
Yeah.
Now, I have to ask, Steve, is what you do entirely legal when it comes to recording concerts?
Well, it is because I don't stealth record. Okay. The video is hard to stealth record. So I have to go into a venue. I have to get the venues okay. I have to get the artists okay. I have to get everybody's okay ahead of time, get set up ahead of time before the crowd comes in and
everything.
And you're
not selling bootleg copies of the concert.
I don't even take a percentage on the YouTube views. Uh-huh. They've been trying to get me to sign up for that, but the artist owns it too. I mean, I shoot it. I own part of it. The artist whose image is on there owns the other part of it. And if I'm making money, they're not.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to make money unfairly on my YouTube channel. So I've been turning down. I have millions of hits on some of my stuff, but I don't take a penny on it.
That
so
is
it's
fascinating.
Truly his passion.
And sometimes they will record live concerts for use later. I mean, there's some famous examples of songs that we think of as live. I'm trying to think of a couple of them, like Eric Clapton's acoustic version of Layla. He's in front of a small live audience.
Or Freebird, who's not heard the live Freebird.
Right. Yeah. There's some iconic ones where they do that, and they set up many microphones and many recordings to get everything perfectly, and then they can mix it later into a record. But that doesn't necessarily capture every show.
Well, not everybody can afford to do that at every show.
Yeah.
So if they can get some document, some kind of recording, it's valuable to them.
Yeah.
To at least have something in their archive.
Well, I'm kind of listening to like folk Americana, kind of more of a, I don't know, bluesy, jazzy. That's kind of the style of music I listen to. And I love watching the live YouTube videos of these artists because not that all music isn't passionate, it is, but it draws me in seeing these artists singing this stuff live. And I didn't even like, think about who was shooting this stuff, you know? And here's my buddy Steve that I hang out with at the Regal Seagull all the time, and I'm just finding this out today.
And millions of hits on YouTube. I needed to almost get run over by an SUV to get millions of hits on YouTube. It sounds like what you do is quite a bit safer than my
and
viral
cooler,
videos.
For sure. Way cooler.
But, you know, I do get paid sometimes. They will hire me, and I've shot for footage that's been used on released DVDs. And, you know, I get paid a little amount. I'm not looking for any big money. I'm just looking to help contribute and forward the process.
That's rad.
He's got a bit of a Jerry Garcia look to him, too. So.
Yeah. Today I do.
Well, he just got back from Hawaii, so he's still in that, like...
Rocking the vacation beard.
He's so relaxed right now. I saw him outside walking in, and I'm like, oh, Steve's here. He looks like he, like, seriously just rolled in from the island.
And I did have a great time out at the islands. It's very relaxing. I did have a fall, hurt my back, so I'm going to give a shout-out to my friend Beth, who helped me, took care of me while I was out there.
Yes, if you're going to hurt your back... Hawaii is the place to be.
Place to be injured.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Steve, thank you so much. Now, this is, I've loved all of our three episodes that we've done so far of our rendezvous. This is what I envisioned, though, when we sat here, is finding random and unique stories from fellow bargoers.
Yes.
I learned so much today, and I found that so interesting. So thank you very much.
Oh, welcome. Anytime.
Okay. Now, I want to just transition. We got a few minutes left. It's funny that Steve records shows as a hobby because so we went to Scott Kaplan's great friend's family reunion comedy benefit show at the La Jolla Comedy Store, and we were specifically multiple times instructed, do not record. There's no phones. Do not take out your phone. Turn it off. Don't want to see anyone recording anything.
I mean, we left our
kids.
Our kids were home. And so it's hard for me to turn off my phone, but I had heard it so much on the radio, on Twitter, at the show, that I actually turned off my phone, which I don't do.
And
Ben didn't turn his phone off.
And I do understand why.
Oh, yeah, now we know why.
We know why, because, well, as Scott said in his introduction, he didn't want to get fired. And there's a chance that being public figures, that if some of the stuff that was said in a very positive and comedic way last night was taken out of context on a video, it could look bad for certain people involved, whether it was him or my co-host Woodsy or John Browner, who also works at the Mighty 1090.
If you see something like that and it's out of context, for sure, any comedy, like, I don't think anyone really records live comedy unless it's professionally planned. You know, it's not going to be good for the comic, because anything taken out of context like that can offend, for sure. I mean, part of being that funny, you have to kind of be offensive.
I'd like to add one more thing about having the phones at shows. Is I'm seeing more and more shows now where the artists are requesting you don't even pull out your cell phones, because A, you're not participating in the moment, and you're not like focused on the music because you got your phone up in the air. You're trying to figure out how to shoot, and B, all the people behind you are having to look at the screen.
Yes, and you're not getting. I have a great phone with a great camera, but if I'm at a concert, you're not getting good video on that phone. I mean, you see people's pictures and videos from concerts, and you're like, just put it down and watch the concert.
This is another reason why I videotape. When I do the videotaping, it's in 4K with high-quality $1,000 microphones. It's going to look and represent the band well.
Yes.
More so than an iPhone.
Yeah, totally.
I would say there should be one song where everyone's encouraged. All right, take out your phones, record this one. Let's, you know, make your memories, your Instagram posts, your videos.
Like
that's
post
what,
it on
that's
social
what
media.
King Crimson did when they came to Humphrey's. They said the last song, you can do all that.
Yeah,
that's
I like that idea.
I
that's
that.
That's a good I one. So that. So we didn't do that last night.
No, we didn't take out our phones last night, but Woodsy was amazing. He was amazing. I was dying.
He was really funny. He was so nervous about the act.
So nervous. Sitting next to me before, he couldn't even. If any of you have seen the pictures of Ben pre-show at like 6 o'clock in the morning at the Mighty 1090, where Woods makes fun of him because he looks like he might be asleep. He's got his head kind of in his hand, and he they've tweeted it out a couple times. Woods has kind of making fun of Ben, like my co-host is sleeping. Woods was doing that last night before the show, and we were making fun of him, and he couldn't even hear us because he was so focused on his, I don't know, even, he was so nervous.
All the performers were great, though.
Yeah.
That was the impressive thing. There was a lot of pro comedians, experienced ones. There were amateurs like Woodsy and John Browner, who I work with at the Mighty 1090, was sensational.
Oh, he was so good, and he made so much fun of you. He really...
I know, but that was part
amazing.
Of it. I was the straight man in the audience just to be there to be made fun
of. No, he did. And he called me beautiful, which, you know... John Browner's now got my heart, honey.
We called all the white women beautiful.
But he called me specific. he said, hey, buddy, pipe down over there. You have a beautiful wife sitting next to you. You don't need to be talking or something. I don't even know. I can't do it. I'm not going to impersonate John Browner.
I actually want to spend a second. I don't want to talk about necessarily all the comedians. I want to talk about the person who put it together.
Oh, yeah.
And that is Scott Kaplan. And I did not know Scott very well. I still don't know him incredibly well. I've only been working at the Mighty 1090 for 2.5 months. I knew him very casually before that. And you kind of think, you know what kind of person someone is. And Scott plays a certain person on the radio. And essentially, that is him.
Yeah.
But I've also gotten to see a different side of Scott, a person who is incredibly caring and passionate and generous. And we record this podcast on Scott's very impressive podcast equipment, which he totally is free to let us borrow encourages
Scott,
us to do so.
So the station kind of encourages the talent to do podcasts if they want to. They kind of encourage it. And when they, encouraged Ben to do a podcast, we kind of balked because obviously Ben works so much and is rarely home. Like, there's no way he's spending another hour outside of the house doing a podcast about golf or something. Like, there's just no way he can do that. And Scott Kaplan came up with the idea that we do this podcast here at the Regal Seagull together because then we're here. We're always here every Friday. We're here for lunch, and why not do it together? And then it's not taking time away, and we get to do this podcast, which I think I'm having more fun doing this podcast than Ben is.
Well, I think I have more fun coming and doing the podcast than simply coming and having lunch and a beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we used to. It actually enhances my enjoyment of our Friday lunches.
Yeah.
To be here at the Regal Seagull and talking to you, and it just sparks more interesting conversation. It's the excuse for us to bring friends and new friends in to talk about different topics. So this
and
is
Patty,
actually better than
Patty
regular lunch.
Loves being on the microphone. Patty loves it.
I really don't like Steve. Just kidding.
Steve, you don't have to take that.
Besides from that, I think these two make a great team.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. So
I wasn't talking about the bartender.
So I want to thank.
But thanks, Scott, for being like so cool about letting us use your equipment and.
I do want to thank him for that. I also want to just say, he is such a. I can't do what he does. He has magnetism. He was the host getting up there.
He's one of those rare people that you meet that could sell you anything.
Yes, exactly.
He could sell you something that you don't even want, but he could find a way to talk you into it.
And I get a lot of people say they don't like Scott. I can't stand Scott Kaplan.
Oh God, I love him and I don't even know him. I really do. I listen to Scott and BR now. Now that you work at the Mighty 1090, I tune in to listen to that show. I actually really like that show.
But I think the people who say that only think they know Scott, or maybe they heard something and they decided they didn't like him. I dare you to listen to him regularly.
Yes, you have to listen to him regularly.
And not like him.
He cares so much about his team, you guys. It's not
even
funny.
His listeners.
Everybody. I mean, he calls his listeners great friends. And then his team, he's got Linda, who is amazing. I met Allie Rat for the first time last night. It was so fun. And so we're like going to have her on. Or she might substitute sometime for you.
That's
when you
fun.
Can't be here. And then John Browner.
Yeah. And he worships Billy Ray. He has forever. He knows. Scott realizes that he wouldn't be here today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah,
you know,
sure.
16 whatever years after he first got to San Diego without having Billy Ray along his side.
Billy Ray adores Scott. You can see that too. And then there's
Billy Ray quit with Scott when Scott got fired the first time because
he
stood up for his guy.
He did. And we can't forget Alex Padilla because he has helped us with this podcast too. And he is incredible.
So Shelly, it sounds like you're saying Scott's the kind of guy that could sell ice to an Eskimo.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, he could.
He could. He could sell.
Although he's mostly in the business of selling Scott Kaplan, and business is booming.
He really is. He really is. I mean, they had like bumper stickers last night, and Ben goes, "Do I really need this?" And I go, "Are you going to put it on your car?" And he said, "No." And I go, "Yeah, you need it then. You do need it. They're cool. I like them. I grabbed two."
And it was all for a great cause to support one of the great friends who. Bringing us back to the very beginning, whose wife committed suicide, Gunnery Sergeant Alan Pena, a couple of weeks ago, and he's got kids to support. And this was just a small thing that Scott wanted to do to someone who has always gone out of his way to help other listeners, to support the good causes from the Scott and BR show. And he's just something he could do to get back. So he organized this comedy show and brought these comedians together. They all donated their time and their sets to come through. And it was just a really great night. So.
Yeah. Well, this was a good show.
It was.
I liked it. I liked talking to Steve and getting one of the patrons of the bar in here. And I want to end it. You're going to take us out, I think. But I want to end it with the quote that Patton Oswalt, it's one of my favorite quotes.
Okay, well, then you just take us on out.
No, you can take us out.
Okay.
But I think that after today and everything that's happened and talking about depression and I just think that being humble and being kind is so important. And be true to yourself, be true to the people around you, be honest, live your life the way you want to live it. And as Patton Oswalt said, it's chaos, be kind.
For Shelly Higgins, I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Our Rendezvous.
Down at Our Rendezvous.
Down at Our Rendezvous.
Three is company too.